The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network
on News Talk.
My next guest has come under some very serious criticism since he last featured on our programme back on February the 1st. At the time of our interview, it was suspected that Russian forces might invade the neighbour Ukraine. The Russian ambassador to Ireland, Yuri Filatov, denied that any such invasion was about to take place. But of course, all of that changed on February the 24th. Now, it's almost 8 months since that interview on February the 3rd, so I'm pleased that Ambassador Yuri Filatov joins us once again on the programme. Ambassador, you're very welcome.
Hello, good morning.
I have to go back to that interview first of all. Do you regret misleading our listeners as to Russia's intentions?
Well, I certainly do not accept that qualification. I did not mislead anyone. I was very forthright in explaining the whole military political situation at the moment, saying that there is no really huge strategic interest for Russia to undertake any military confrontation unless the circumstances would force us to do that. That's what I've been trying to explain.
Now, the invasion happened, and we saw it was a massive invasion. It wasn't the limited military operation that was perhaps predicted. The description by Artishuk in the United Nations of Russia now is of a rogue state, a rogue nation. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I have already said something about that, about the speech by Tishuk at the UN. I think it's, I might say it's self-contradictory in certain aspects. We have heard really many proper words about challenges the international community is facing, ideals that guide the Irish foreign policy, including the most important principle, and I can read it from my memory, all people have the right to live in dignity, to have their human rights and fundamental principles respected. In my mind, it's regrettable that, judging by the Tishuk narrative, these principles do not apply to the people of Eastern Ukraine.
This is a narrative that Russia is trying to portray, that there are people in eastern Ukraine who are deeply unhappy and that Russia needed to go in to vindicate their human rights. But what we have seen of the war thus far is quite the opposite. The Ukrainian people have been denied of their human rights. They have been forced to flee in their millions away from the war. We have seen the evidence of torture and death and mass graves in Bucha, in Izium, and there are reports of other places as well. This does not seem to be the vindication of the people of Ukraine's rights.
Let me finish what I have been saying, that for 8 years, the Russian-speaking people of Donbas have been deprived of their fundamental rights and freedoms, above all the right to live. They had to defend themselves against nationalistic anti-Russian government in Kyiv, which has waged war on them, put them under blockade in an attempt of really forced Ukrainization. Now that the Eastern Ukraine is voting in the referenda to retain their way of life and during Russia, the Irish leaders are calling that a sham. That reminds me of the contemptuous attitude by Zelensky towards these people, who just this August suggested that, or maybe sometime earlier, that anyone who, for the sake of their children, grandchildren, the Russian-speaking people, should get out of there and get out to Russia. Well, ironically, I may say, that's what they are doing exactly right now.
You refer to the title that's been given to those referendums as, sham is how they're being labelled in Ukraine and indeed in the greater world. And the indications are that nobody is going to believe the results of these referendums, which seem to have been conducted under duress.
Well, these referendums are certainly being conducted in a very unusual circumstance. You have to admit the will of the people who are going to the polls, to the ballot boxes, under fire, actually physically under fire. There seems to be a clear attempt by the Ukrainian side to make every effort to derail the whole issue. But this is not going to succeed, I think, because people are fed up. They want clarity. They want certainty, and they want out of Ukraine, and you will see by the results.
The analysis of this suggests that these referendums would take place, the result of foregone conclusion. According to reports we've seen on Telegram, people boycotting those referendums in huge numbers. But the result will be inevitable, that the votes will come in as support for becoming part of Russia. But that is being analysed as simply a strategy by President Putin to enlarge Russia and to render those parts of Ukraine, currently parts of Ukraine, as part of the national territory of Russia, so that if they are attacked by Ukraine, Russia can respond with perhaps even nuclear weapons.
Well, there is not a strategy in place to enlarge Russia by whatever scenarios you might cite. No, this is not about enlarging territory of Russia. This is all about securing the right of the Russian speakers of these areas, huge areas in the eastern part of Ukraine, to live their own life as they wish. And they have been deprived of that. That's one aspect. The other one is certainly a huge military political issue of ensuring the security of Russia itself under the circumstance when U.S. and NATO have been certainly driving the whole thing to the border of Russia, threatening us with the military pressure, which under any circumstance, no leader of any country would tolerate. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole...
That is the narrative from President Putin. But this seems to have been a big miscalculation by President Putin. The initial attacks in the war, which went as far as Kiev, have now been pushed back. The counteroffensive for the moment by the Ukrainians seems to be working. Many, many thousands of Russian soldiers have died. President Putin has been forced into a mobilization which appears to be deeply unpopular.
I don't think that there have been any miscalculations. The president referred to in his address on September 21st, there have been two points. First of all, he reaffirmed the strategic aim of the special military operation, which I have already mentioned. The other one is that the recognition that in light of huge concerted effort by the U.S. and NATO to oppose Russia militarily in Ukraine, it is necessary to increase capability of our forces on the Ukrainian theater. One might just point out that it's not only about equipping Ukrainian military with huge amounts of modern weapons. The whole NATO satellite group is working in the interests of this operation. It's about 70 military satellites, about 200 private satellites, the all intelligence and targeting is being done by NATO. In essence, we've been...
But wasn't that, isn't that part of the miscalculation? That is part of President Putin's miscalculation. All of that was a possibility at the time he ordered his troops into Ukrainian territory. All of that was known. Did he believe that the West would not respond to the war?
No, not really. Of course, we have seen the deliberate lying even before the events of this year to do whatever is possible to militarize Ukraine, to create a sort of anti-Russia on our borders. That was quite clear. That was one of the main reasons for the action which has been undertaken. Of course, the situation on the ground can evolve, and that is the reason we are doing what we are doing with the partial mobilization, which, as you said, you said it is unpopular. I don't think it's to that extent. There are some expressions of discontent, but that certainly has to be expected. In some way, people could be scared, etc. But at the same time, we even have a huge number of volunteers who are not sort of supposed to be conscripted, but they go.
Pictures emerge from the borders with Georgia, for example, of many, many cars queuing up to get out of the country. Reports from Turkey of Russians wanting to go there. The same from Moldova and other countries. Clearly, it's not a tiny fraction of those likely to be conscripted who are running away from the conflict. It's many, many more.
If you take numbers, the mobilization resource, the overall mobilization resource of Russia, is about 25 million, okay? What we're talking about now is mobilizing just 1% of that, which is roughly 300,000, okay? What you have mentioned on the Georgian border, et cetera, as elsewhere, well, that might be 3,000 people. So these numbers do not add up. It's not the major major factor. The mobilization is supported by people, and I'm pretty sure it's it will be done according to the plans of the Ministry of Defense.
Ireland has aligned itself with a new round of sanctions which are proposed, and these would be even more severe on Russia. Anything that has an electronic component would not be allowed to be exported to Russia or sold. In the past, the embargo was on military-based hardware. Now it's pretty much everything. Banking will be curbed. There are so many more layers to this proposals of sanctions which will be discussed by EU ministers. There is the possibility that Russia will suffer even more dramatically from this round. Does Ireland's support for these sanctions make Ireland an enemy of Russia?
Well, I don't think Ireland is our enemy. I know many people in the country who are still friends of ours and will be, I'm pretty sure. The lying the policies of the Irish government is something else. That is certainly an unfriendly policy towards Russia, and that has been well stated quite clearly on many, many occasions. As far as the sanctions are concerned, I am pretty sure we will live through that period, and it is unfortunate because that makes life of people not so much in Russia but in Europe for that matter quite more difficult, and it's not the way to deal with the core issue of the of Ukraine.
Do you believe that President Putin has the appetite to use nuclear weapons?
Well, I don't see any inclination to do that. the president has not said anything suggesting that he is playing any nuclear strikes, whatever. Nothing in our position on the nuclear issue has changed. All the pertaining fundamental documents are in place and in force. What we have been reminding our international audience that these doctrines provide that in certain circumstances, such as existential threat to Russia, the nuclear weapons could be used, and there is there should be no doubt about that. That is solely for the knowledge of the people who've been quite clearly outspoken on this with the nuclear alarm rhetoric, which is probably the worst thing could be done under these circumstances.
How does Russia feel about its isolation now? Because both, you know, two countries that were on the sidelines of this initially, India and China, are now calling for a negotiated settlement. They want Russia to come to the table.
Well, I don't think we have any reason to feel isolated. If you just look at what we have witnessed during the high-level week at the UN General Assembly, and
there were only seven countries, including Russia itself, that objected to President Zelensky addressing the UN by video. That's a very small fraction of the United Nations Assembly.
You have to look at the wider picture. Our Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Lavrov, he has had many dozens of meetings in multilateral and bilateral format there in New York just in the 5 days he's been here. I don't think this is you can describe that as isolation. We have had numerous dialogues with the. You know, when you speak about isolation, it seems like you see the world only through the European perspective. But the world is much, much larger than Europe and the United States.
Sure, but I did mention the seven who voted in favor or against, and they included Russia, but Cuba, Nicaragua, Syria. You know, you don't have many friends when it came. You didn't have many friends when it came to that vote. So when I say isolation, that is the evidence, if you like, for your isolation.
Oh, you can't take any particular single vote at the UN to be a representative of the much, much wider phenomenon. And I'm pretty sure that our partners throughout the world think the same way.
Now, the question of nuclear weapons, you said earlier that President Putin would use them under certain circumstances, which are an existential threat to Russia. Now, does that mean that having annexed the four territories which have voted in the referendums, that you would regard those territories as part of Russia, and therefore any attack on them would be an attack on Russia?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't want to dwell into hypothetical situations. Let's see what goes on with the referendums, with the sort of legal ramifications of that. But one thing is pretty much evident and sure. We have had very clear and very persistent consistent policy on the nuclear issue. The nuclear war should not be waged and cannot be won. That is something is still in place, still in force. We abide by that, and we are against any sort of nuclear alarmism, which has been, we've witnessed that over recent weeks in some parts of the world, mainly in the States and closer to Ireland, just across the water here.
The question of war crimes committed in Ukraine, in Bucha, Izium, the evidence of mass graves, talk of the castration of Ukrainian citizens by Russian troops, talk of theft, of pillaging, of looting, of ordinary civilian homes and businesses. It would make a Russian, if they were to know of this kind of behavior, ashamed of their armed forces.
What you are describing is you like the word narrative. This is exactly the Ukrainian narrative, which has been in play for all these months. We do not accept that entirely, because this is a part of the psychological war operations. All of the instances you have mentioned should be thoroughly and independently investigated. And we are pretty much sure that if such an investigation is carried out, that claims and accusations will not hold any water in them. Personally speaking, I do not believe a word about I have heard about.
So what are they finding? What, you know, the international community is there, international press is there. They are finding mass graves, even more mass graves too, after the first one in Izium, and the evidence was seen very clearly in Bucha that atrocities had taken place. What more evidence do you need?
Well, let's leave it to the investigators, because it's a little bit unusual to discuss these macabre circumstances. And we know for sure that, for example, in Bucha, there hasn't been any dead bodies lying on the streets for 2 days after the Russian military left the town.
I think the satellite image, the satellite ambassador,
it's all good, and the sun is shining in Bucha, and then all of a sudden, in 2 or 3 days after, you got these pictures. I mean, it's highly questionable, to say that.
I mean, you're claiming this is propaganda, but the satellite imagery suggested otherwise. But finally, Ambassador, I should ask you about President Putin's health. There have been rumors, as you know yourself, circulating for a long time that he is not particularly well. And whether that is true or not, I don't know. But no one can go on forever. He has the provision, I think, to be president, having been president and then prime minister and now president again, until perhaps 2035. But in the absence of Putin, who effectively is a one-man ruler, what then?
Well, first of all, I am pretty much confident that the president is in good health. And I wish him certainly to stay this way. Secondly, we have according to the Constitution, we will have presidential election in 2024, and we'll see what will be there. I mean, it's, at this point in time, the president is hugely popular in the country. He is leading people in the very difficult circumstances, and he has all the remnants of really a good leader. And despite all the the rumors or whatever you mentioned.
Ambassador, Russian ambassador to Ireland, Yuri Filatov, thank you very much for joining us on the program. And apologies, the quality of the line was not as we would have wished it. So if you had some difficulty in following it, our apologies.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.